And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you. It is 5 minutes past nine on this Friday, the 12th of April, 2024. And you're very welcome along to the last edition of the 9 to noon show for this week. And as always, Friday is a busy mixed bag. Our next hour is going to be dedicated to discussing some of the big issues of the day. We have a panel which I'll introduce to you in a moment, but I want to invite you to get involved in this conversation as well. 086 60 25000 is the WhatsApp and text number. Don't forget you can WhatsApp your voice notes to us as well if that's how you wish to express your opinion. You can call Caroline and Shannon on 07491 25000, and if you prefer to email, it's comments@highlandradio.com. and a quick reminder, you can watch us on your smart TV or your Fire Stick. We're on the YouTube app Highland Radio Ireland. We're on the X platform and across Facebook, Highland Hub, Highland News and Sports. So all that's done, just time to say good morning to our guest, Leonard Watson, owner of Watson's Menswear, Letterkenny, and a community campaigner. Good morning to you, Leonard. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Morning, Greg. Morning, panel.
Good to have you with us. Nolene Blackwell, a human rights lawyer, is with us. Nolene, good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg.
Thanks so much for accepting the invite. And Councillor Jimmy Kavanagh, a Fine Gael councillor in the Letterkenny Milford Municipal District, and of course looking to retain that seat in June's elections. Good morning, Jimmy.
Good morning, Greg, Leonard and Nolan.
Thanks so much for joining us. Okay. We'll start with the news that the Justice Minister has described the new EU migration pact as a game changer. She says it will mean Ireland will no longer be alone when dealing with the migration issue. Yesterday, the EU Parliament approved the new policy, which will see greater member state collaboration and faster approval times on migrant applications. I think this is a real game changer because it means that as a country, firstly, we're not dealing with this on our own, Helen McEntee said. There are a number of measures, five key measures, to create uniform rules around the identification of people who arrive in Europe from outside the EU to claim asylum, to develop a common database about new arrivals to Europe which can paint a more accurate picture of migration trends, to speed up decisions on claims made by asylum seekers who enter Europe, to establish a solidarity mechanism so that all countries share responsibility for asylum applications rather than those that are at the edge of Europe, and to ensure that the EU is prepared for future crises, including the weaponization of migration. Now, the government says it will sign up in full. Sinn Féin says it would sign up to two measures: the returning of people who seek to make asylum applications here to their first country where an international protection application has been made, and also opting into the Eurodac regulation, because participation in this fingerprint database is seen as necessary to conduct checks and vetting. So sorry for the long preamble, but it's kind of complex. And just for those who maybe are hearing bits and pieces, I wanted to try and get through it as much as is possible. And hopefully I got it right there. Nolene Blackwell, as a human rights lawyer, what do you think we should be doing? Are you in favour of the pact, signing up to it in full, or would you be of the opinion that we should opt out? We are one of two countries in Europe that can opt out to all or some of these measures.
Yeah, and the other country has opted out, the other country being Denmark, which typically opts out of everything to do with migration in Europe. Look, somebody else described it as the good, the bad and the ugly. There's good bits in it, there's bad bits in it, and there's some really dangerous things in it as well. So, look, nobody is saying that our current asylum system, our current processing system is good or is effective. And there is some value in having a streamlined process to have a clearer way of dealing with people. And ultimately, if you could actually give people a decision within a reasonable length of time, that's in everybody's interest. The asylum seekers, the processors, the whole country. So that is not a bad thing per se. The thing is, though, that it is setting up some very... Well, we'll have to see how they work out. We have 2 years to implement it. And in those 2 years, we will have to work out ways. I think it is going to harden borders. It is going to make it even harder for people to apply to Europe in the first place. And when they get here, there seems to be a greater risk of detention of people when all they're doing is exercising their human right to claim asylum. There will be this Europe-wide database of fingerprints. Facial recognition seems to be on the carpet as well. But the good bit about it is this: very, very few people come to Greece or to Italy to apply for asylum to those countries. But they are the first countries they reach. And to be honest, we get away with an awful lot being on an island on the other side of Europe. And one of the good things is the Solidarity Pact, the thing that says, actually, this is a Europe-wide problem and the whole of Europe has to engage in helping to solve it. So it could
can I say,
be an advantage.
Is it the case that it's not whether or not you believe whether we should sign up to all seven elements of this or not? You're coming at this from the human rights approach, are you, as to whether the pact in its entirety is fair to those seeking asylum?
And fair to a world we live in, where one of the escape routes the whole world has is the current refugee process. If we had a fair world, if we had a world where everybody was treated equally, then people could come and go as they wished. No country in the world is going to allow that. On the other hand, if we don't have a capacity for people who are fleeing war, who are fleeing persecution, who are fleeing the worst of tragedies, think about people in Sudan right now, where we hear nothing about them whatsoever. Well, very little on Irish media. And they are running or crawling from city to city to avoid being killed, mutilated, persecuted and absolutely tortured.
And whilst that is...
If we don't have some sluice gate in the dam that holds all those people in other countries, if we don't have a capacity to deal with those who are persecuted, we risk bursting the dam altogether, and that's in no one's interest. And it's also totally unfair to those who are fleeing persecution. And when the Irish needed to flee from persecution, from harm, they were able to do it. It's just one of those things you need in a world.
Okay, I'll come back to you, of course, because there's lots to tease out there. Leonard Watson, I mean, obviously, do you think the EU pact is fair? There are, you know, criticism of it from the left and also from the right. And I hate to phrase it like that, but it's just the way it's easier to explain. And then the internal conversation is whether we should opt out of all of it or some of it. What say you?
I agree. Just what you said there, actually. It's imperfect when you hear the left and the right both complaining, one saying it's not going far enough, one saying it's going too far. But Greg, there's one thing. Ireland needs migration. We do need migration. You know, our health service needs migration. But it's when we bring these people in, it's processing. As Noeline said, we need to process them quicker. Like, if they're able to stay here,
Don't have to sign up to an EU pact to do that. The only thing us signing up to an EU pact to do that means that we actually get fined if we don't do it quick enough. It's within our gift to reform the systems ourselves internally, process people more quickly internally. Up until recently, we were being told we were doing quite well at that. And now all of a sudden we need an EU migration pact to do it. In other words, the risk of fines.
But Greg, in fairness to you, there's a lot of people who are landing in countries throughout Europe and then coming on to Ireland. They are meant to be processed in the country that landed. I know what you're saying about Italy and Greece are probably taking too many and people want to move on. But the fact that they're landing in countries, safe countries like France and Germany and that, and they're just moving on, they're getting flights to Ireland. There has to be some kind of balance within the thing. We have to have some kind of limit on the number of people we're bringing into the country, because the system will crash. Like, we're seeing now with the health service. I can see it with children's services. Like, we're not keeping up pace with the amount of people that's coming into the country. Like, you know, as I say, immigration is good, but the system has to stay up here too. We've been caught with our trousers down in the last 2 or 3 years. With the amount of Ukrainians that came in, which was needed. You know, at the end of the day, they're in a war. But the system has to catch up now, like, you know, in and around housing, health, education, all that has to catch up. And if it means that we have to limit it for a while, I think it's a good thing. You know, we need migration, but the migration pact.
I mean, if it is to be fair, and Noeline's well read on this as well, of course, and can correct me if I'm wrong, it means we probably might take more migrants in here because we have a shared responsibility to take some of the pressure from Italy and Greece. And if we sign up in full, there's a certain amount of refugees, asylum seekers that we will be obliged to take. And it will be up to us then to ensure that we can house them and look after them and process them correctly. So the EU Migration Pact, in signing up to it, its entirety, you know, perhaps means more inward asylum seeking.
But there's still a lot to be teased out there, Greg. Like, you know, Nolan says it's not full details yet. We don't actually know if we would have to take more numbers yet. In theory, we could have to take more numbers. But again, it's all around getting these people processed quickly. Even though I hear people the last couple of days, there's a shortage of staff in certain areas in this country. People are coming, foreign nationals come to get the interviews. They haven't got good English. You know, they're here, they're eligible to work in the country. Their English isn't good enough. We have to give them the best opportunity to create a life for themselves here. Like, you know, because at the end of the day, it's a good thing for us too. Or we have an aging population. We do need that younger cohort coming in for the pensions of tomorrow. So, like, you know, it's very easy to say close your doors too. Like, you know, but there has to be a balance. Like, so, but my big thing would, we have to process these people quicker. Like.
Mm-hmm. Councillor Kavanagh.
Thanks, Greg. Yeah, listen, I think it's a very significant change in the introduction of the pact. And as Leonard says, I think it's all about speeding up the processing of asylum applications so that the people in need of asylum can be dealt with quickly.
But just on and I'm sorry to cut across to you, Councillor, I think we all can agree, can we, and I'm open to correction on this, we actually don't need to join the EU Migration Pact to speed up the processing of people. That is within our gift. We could do that right now. So is that the actual argument that you have for signing up to the Migration Pact, Jimmy?
I think, Greg, that we do need that harmonisation across the whole EU. One of the big problems that I think is happening around all of us, and we see it all the time, is the whole communication thing. And, you know, if we have a clear system in place that's harmonised across the EU, then we can clear that up with people. Greg, as a public representative, I tell you, just recently in the last few weeks, I got a call to tell me that a busload of men are after Raven in Dunfanaghy. I got a call to tell me there's a busload of men after Raven in Creasley. I got a call to tell me there's a busload of men after Raven in Rafoe. None of it true. And this lack of clarity and things, I think, has helped feeding that element, Greg. And I think it's good that we have a harmonised system and that we're part of it and that we're clear of what we're doing. I agree totally with Leonard about the need for our health service, our education service, childcare in particular, to come up to speed. But we had a situation where we had to respond immediately to a crisis in Ukraine and so on. You can't respond immediately with your services, you know. So that's something that has to be dealt with. But I think all the stories that are out there, Greg, this can help quell a lot of the people's fears, and that people know what is actually happening, who's coming in, when they're coming in. They know that they've been properly vetted. They know that there's a system in place to quickly remove people that shouldn't come in, and so on. Mm-hmm. And with Nolan on the human rights side of it, absolutely everybody agrees. And
but I think, we'd be rule takers from Europe, i.e. we couldn't set our own safe countries, for an example. We'd have to go with what Europe says in relation to that, so we'd lose that element of control.
But we do that anyway, Greg. We harmonise anyway with Europe across the way. And I think what both Leonard and particularly Jimmy is saying there around harmonisation, that is actually, it's one of the ways in which we can stop forum shopping as well. Now, in truth, the reality, and the Irish are the best in the world at it, people go where their people are. So if somebody has family here or something, they will try and get here. If people have family in France, they'll try and get there as well. So there is a value. We can set our own countries. We could have our own fairer, quicker systems. We simply don't have the infrastructure that has managed to do that over at least 20 years, we haven't done that. So if there is a more structured way, and if we are sharing responsibility for that with others, and the thing is actually, one of the things in it that I just don't quite understand how it works, but apparently we can pay for other people to, if we pay, I think, 20,000 per asylum seeker, something we can say to Greece or Italy, you keep them, you find the space for them. Not that Greece and Italy are full of houses for people either that are just arriving by the boatload, but we can actually pay off our responsibility as a rich country, and so we can manage things in a way that that maybe we're not managing.
What is the alternative as well? Because you know, the big thing with Brexit was that Britain, the UK, would take back control of their borders, that they would opt out of these European mechanisms, and they'd be able to, you know, protect the borders, as I say, stop the boats and all that type of stuff. But the asylum-seeking, immigration, illegal arrivals into the UK is as bad as it ever was, which is arguably that's the alternative. I wonder what's going wrong there, Leonard.
But the Nolan's point, like Greg, if people are going to, if they want to travel to a country, they're going to find a way of getting to the country. And I still think, like the UK, the whole thing about breakfast, take our borders back. Well, that's a load of poppycock now. It's just been proven. Like the numbers are still going up. People will find a way to get there. It's all about processing these people, and if they're entitled to be there, get them into the system, get them working, get them paying taxes. You know, make them part of the community. Like, and but this is all taking too long. And you know, and as Jimmy said too, there's a lot of scaremongering going out there. You're seeing people run around with cameras and people's faces, you know, foreign nationals, and telling them that they shouldn't be in our country. And all that's all just horrible stuff that's been done.
You know what? I get you, right? But if you're in a small community, and the last hotel in that community has just been filled with 40 fellas, or if you're in a rural village in some county in the Midlands and the population has been increased by 40% with no consultation, and there's you know, there's 45 single men in a local property, people are going to be vexed about that.
We talked about just before, there's no equality around the country. Like Donegal have taken in 8,500 people in the last couple of years. There's other counties who are probably better off than Donegal, have taken in a fraction of that there. Donegal's sitting in number 3, I think, in the country for taking in asylum seekers and foreign nationals. Like, so, you know, and I get them communities, I get the hotels, things like, you see Drogheda now, the biggest hotel in Drogheda now has been taken over fully. That shouldn't be. Like, this is where the government has been caught on the back foot.
Yeah, but
like,
we're signing so up to a pact. We're signing up to a pact where we're having to build, what is it, 4 or 5 detention centres effectively around the country. There's a planning process that has to be gone through, which is going to take absolutely years. Our systems are already bursting at the seams, and we're signing up to a pact that is going to potentially increase the amount of people coming in. I mean, it would be great that this pact was a silver bullet, that everything would be smooth and what have you, but we can't. I can't sit here and put that out to the people of the Northwest as if the pact is going to fix all of that, because evidently there's an awful lot of internal problems that have to be resolved before the pact could even start to begin to look any way positive for the country.
But aren't we going to have those problems anyway, whether we sign a pact or we don't? We can either do it in our own disorganised way. And it's hard to blame the immigrants, or it's hard to blame the EU for the fact that there is no community engagement, that people don't understand what they're doing, that people feel in parts of the country they're being unfairly treated, that they're left without services. Those are things. Look, the asylum seekers, the migrants are going to come anyway. That is something that the EU cannot fix for us. That's our business to fix it, to not be afraid of it. And it's fixable. It is in cases you will see where communities have taken on board. And some of those have been in Donegal and along the West Coast as well, where you can see where people have been absorbed, welcomed into communities. There's value given to what they can do, and even things like Leonard was saying about teaching people English. All of these things make such a difference. They're all possible. Mm. The EU can't fix it. The migrants who are undoubtedly going to come can't fix it. That's a matter for government to fix.
Nolene, is it not a case that, and I think a lot of people out there feel this, that until such time as we have greater capacity in our schools, have greater capacity for GPs, the health service and housing, that we should be using whatever mechanisms we can to slow the influx of people into the country? Because you do have to think about the people that are already here. And that's not just white Irish people. And I don't mean that in any way offensive. That is a population of all different types of people from all parts of the world that all deserve a certain standard of life. And do we not need to get the services and the systems in place correctly before we can take more people in? Is that not just a reality of the situation?
But isn't that true for the whole first developed world? We're the seventh richest country in the world. Try telling that to the people in Afghanistan or the people in Sudan or the people in Congo who are fleeing war and persecution. Try telling that to somebody coming from Syria who's at huge risk to their lives where they are right now. God knows what will happen if people are ejected out of Gaza. Where are they going to go along the way? So that would be lovely in an ordered world where we didn't have a massive issue around migration from people from war, from climate change, from absolute economic deprivation. When you think of people in countries where they have absolutely nothing, they have nothing to lose by seeking a better life, and that's what they are doing. Mm. That's why they're prepared to risk drowning, all the other things they risk along the way. They have nothing left to lose. So given that we can't fix those problems right now, we then have to go about building better systems here. Mm-hmm. It is not beyond our wit to do it. We just haven't done it.
Stay with me, please. Well, of course you are. You're not going anywhere. I refuse to allow either of the three of you or any of the three of you to go. It's Leonard Watson, Nolene Blackwell, Councillor Jimmy Kavanagh. I just have a couple of more questions on this, and we've other topics to discuss. Keep your comments coming into us as well, of course, on 08660 25000. Okay, we've loads to get through in the next 32 minutes. I just want to stay with the EU Migration Pact at the moment because, Councillor Kavanagh, of course, I'm not sure if you've began knocking on doors yet, but I want to talk about the sort of politicisation of this issue. I suppose it probably wouldn't have been passed as quick as it was without the EU elections upcoming because it has been floated around for quite some time and here we are now. But also, of course, we've got Sinn Féin taking their stance on it. They're saying it's not a U-turn, but they believe, as I mentioned, that we should opt into the fingerprinting and we should opt into the measures to send people back to where they first claimed asylum. So it is a political issue, and it's going to be on the doorsteps as well in and around Letterkenny, Milford. Has that happened yet? What are people saying to you? What are you saying to them?
Greg, I've been out now seven nights so far. I've just started the canvas. To be quite honest, it hasn't been mentioned. I haven't heard it mentioned on the doors yet. Having said that, you know, it's not every door you get an answer from, so it's hard to judge yet how that is going to be as an issue in the election. But it's certainly an issue on social media, you know, and that's where a lot of this is coming from. Whether people will say the same things to you on the door or not, I think it's unlikely. But, you know, Greg, to go back to some of your points there about having services up to speed before we bring people in and wait until we have services, right? That's okay, but the asylum seekers that are fleeing war, fleeing persecution can't wait. And so there's always going to be an element of playing catch-up, I think, in this. And just something that Leonard mentioned, that, you know, that Donegal has got a lot more than other counties. But if you look at that in the long term, it's a very, very positive thing for Donegal, I think, because it can, in the long term, grow our economy. Those people can mm-hmm. can get jobs, and a lot of them have very, very significant contributions to make.
Yeah, so, I accept exactly what you're saying about talking about services and what we should be providing for other people and what should be our global moral duty or whatever way you want to phrase it. But if you're one of the 14,000 people in Ireland, and many of them actually are from outside of Ireland, actually, which is often not discussed, but the 14,000 homeless Irish, and as I say, there's a large proportion of them aren't Irish, so to speak, but also the 4,000 or 5,000 children. Or if you are struggling in this county, you can't get into the hospital or you can't get into your GP, or you're in a defective concrete blocked home and you can't find alternative accommodation because it's all been taken up. It's very hard to park that when you're thinking about yourself and your own children and then try and look at the bigger picture that you're painting and Nolene is painting about the terrible hardship as others are fleeing. That might sound incredibly crass from me or heartless, and it's not at all because that's not the type of person I am. But when you break it down to what individuals are feeling, they're going through it as well. They're having tough lives as well, probably not the same as those that are coming into the country. But they're asking, you know, if there's 45 fellas just landed in my village, where are their wives and their children? You know what I mean? And these are human emotions that we can't ignore, or I think it's not wise to not discuss them.
Yeah, Greg, I fully understand all of that. And a lot of the things that you mentioned there are huge issues, but they're separate issues. You know, the whole thing about homelessness, as you know, is an extremely complicated area, and with lots of side things going on as well. And it's a very, very difficult...
I don't wish to be argumentative, but a great deal of the spare housing stock that was available in Inishowen is now being used to host asylum seekers and refugees. So to say they're two separate issues is not factually true. How we deal with them are perhaps two different issues, but the current state of affairs, I don't think they are, Jimmy, with respect.
Yeah, Greg, but we can't choose the timing of these things. You know, we have a huge housing issue anyway. You mentioned Micah there. It's absolutely massive, and it's an absolute scourge for everybody that have it, and I have several members of my own family that have it. So, listen, those things, and we have a housing crisis. Based on fact, there was a decade that there wasn't a house built in the country. You know, and you have these things all happen, but we can't having the choice of deciding when war is going to break out in Ukraine or these things. You know,
I get you, and you say we can't have any influence on it. And again, I just want to tease out a subject. I'm not coming from this one position or not, but we had a huge influx of Ukrainians to this country. And then the government decided to reduce the amount of money new arrivals from Ukraine would receive when they came to this country. And the amount of people coming into the country reduced dramatically. That's a fact.
Yeah, that is a fact.
So they had a choice, and they thought, right, well, Ireland no longer is the better option.
Absolutely, and we were extremely generous to people coming in initially. And you know, I think you learn that maybe the system isn't coping here, and you have to scale it back, and that's what we've done. But, I mean, like, no one, you know, there's no system there that says, you know, A, B, C, D, and E, and F, this is how we're going to respond when this happens. Mm-hmm. You know, that's just not life. Okay. That's just not the world. Yep. And, you know, so it's just, Greg, it's a very complex, it's a very difficult situation. I understand, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I have a daughter who's a public health nurse. She's under tremendous pressure. I have nieces and nephews that are teaching. They're under incredible pressure. You know, and you know, the system hasn't kept up with giving them what they need to provide all for all these extra people coming in. That's just a fact.
Okay.
We haven't got the housing as well. But all these things have to be tackled. And, you know, they have to be, unfortunately, tackled in a reactive way, because that's how things happened.
Okay, Lennon, were you looking to come in there?
Well, but I'm just saying, like, Jimmy, to a point, you're right. But everything's happening too slow, Jimmy. Like, house building in Donegal is way too slow. And we can put that down to plan on that. But like, as a town like Letterkenny, it's growing fast. We are not keeping up with the number of people who want to come here to work. The number of companies are trying to come here to set up. We're not keeping up. And on the other side, with my special needs head on me, CDMTs, we're going to have the same amount of speech therapists and OTs and all that we had 5 or 6 years ago. That we have the exact same number. The numbers that have come into the system have exploded, like. So, like, Jimmy, to say that things, you know, we need to start moving these things quicker. We need to start scaling up. At the end of the day, if we have an extra 1,000 kids in Donegal, we need more speech therapists. We need more OTs. We need all that to be scaled up. Yeah, no, but we're not scaling up, Jimmy. We're not scaling up.
Yeah, I agree 100% with you in everything that you're saying, Leonard. But, you know, these people don't grow on trees either. You know, it's very, very difficult. And we've seen with the hospital how difficult it can be to attract consultants to Donegal, for example, for a variety of reasons, that they don't have enough of the complex cases that they want to see to keep up their skills. They don't have support when it comes to trying to get holidays, trying to get a day off, all of that. I've talked to consultants about this in the hospital, and I've seen as well psychologists, for example.
A lot of the consultants are able to stay in Donegal working in private practices. They leave the hospital and can work private and seem to be doing really quite well out of that. And also to this about employment, we have measures at the moment from third countries where we can, or certain industries where there is demand, can bring people in. We pay them 23 grand a year, by the way, which is not enough for them to survive here. That's being increased to 30,000. And those that are taking them in from these countries now aren't happy about that because they can't make enough money off their mushrooms and what have you. Nolene, just a question about this. We're seeing it in America, we're seeing it across Europe, and now we're starting to see internally that parties are not U-turning, I'm not trying to be evocative with the language, but are adjusting their position. Even Simon Harris is coming in, changing his language on immigration. Do you think it's unfortunate that it is being politicised now? Because your approach, clearly, you come at it from a non-political view, right? You come at it from a human rights position, and that's quite clear. People might disagree with you, but that's your view and it's very clear. Do you think it's regrettable, unfortunate, or just the way the world that now really it's a vote catcher and people are starting to align themselves perhaps with where they might see more votes coming from?
And also people are aligning themselves with fear. I mean, I'm not just talking theoretical human rights. I was a solicitor practicing immigration law for many, many years. And you saw people coming in with the most amazing skills that they couldn't use in Ireland for the 5 or 6 years it took them to re-qualify or re-register themselves along the way. You saw people coming in, and men who were coming in because they were the most able to get away out of their places, leaving families behind. And again, the Irish did that as well because it made pragmatic sense. So it's not really that it's a political issue. It's a political issue being driven by fear. These are where you look at where this is harmful. It is where people are seeing, you know, those awful phrases that were used about young men who were being driven. They knew not where in the country and parked somewhere without community recognition or understanding of where for the community of where they were going. So it's the fear element. And what I love about Jimmy's approach to it here today is to try and say, can we treat it rationally? Can we recognise this is part of a bigger problem along the way? It has such potential to be positive for our country. Again, Leonard making the point about we're an ageing population. We need other people in. We need workers. Some of these people could build if they were able to and allowed to build the houses that we need along the way. So it's what I really, really am afraid of, not just in migration, but across so many other issues, across all forms of change, discrimination, is that we other people, that we say that's the them and this is
I get that. And to be honest with you, I'm really uncomfortable talking about other human beings like this. But unfortunately, if we were to, you know, if I was to choose my language so carefully for every question, we'd be here all day. But
I wasn't criticizing.
I get you.
A decent discussion about it. But I do think fear actually catches people's attention faster.
Yes, I recognise there is a fear, and I'm trying to relate the views of what are expressed to me. But when you have lots of families in Donegal, Nolene, Leonard and Jimmy, whereby their young people, some for the lifestyle, but feel that there's no future for them here. There's no prospect of home ownership. They feel desperate and they leave. And they've left in their thousands. Those people could also have, if we looked after them, built houses, built our infrastructure. Yeah. But instead, it feels, but for some, and I have to use the word, but I don't mean it in the context it's often used, they're now being replaced by people who Ireland's much better than where they are and they're happy here. But this country, for an awful lot of young people, is not good enough for them. I mean, Jimmy, you must recognise that as well.
Yeah, Greg, young people want to move. They want to see the world. They want to get away. You know, but you're talking about them not being able to buy houses. Have you tried to buy a house in San Francisco or Sydney or London or New York? I have a daughter in San Francisco, and I won't say it up here, but the rent that she is paying per month is absolutely fine. She's done a good job. She's making good money, but it's all relative. She would be equally as well off here, but she wanted to go away and she wanted to travel and she wanted to see, and she was out the door the minute she graduated. And that's the story too with her nurses and that. Young people aren't going away thinking, oh, I can't buy a house here. They're not going away to buy houses. They're going away to have a good time.
Is that what you think, Leonard?
See the world.
That people are leaving Donegal to...
I think the vast majority of them, that's the case now.
What do you think,
Leonard? It's not forced immigration anymore, Greg. We have full employment in Ireland.
Like, Jim, to a point, I agree. But, Greg, like, I know a lot of young ones who went away. I've had employees that's headed off. And it wasn't down. The ones that I've been chatting, it wasn't down because they couldn't afford a house. Like,
why did they leave?
They want to have that life experience. Like, okay. You know, like, their friends are in Australia. Like, Greg, you're seeing them going to Australia now. They're not good. They're looking to save money now, but they'll come back in their 4 or 5 years with a bit of money. But it's definitely, I'll say a good 50,
I must 50. Be incredibly out of touch because that's just not my experience at all. My experience is moms and dads gutted that their children have come to them and said, "Mom, Dad, I'm going to go to Australia. My friends are out there because I don't really see a future myself here." Not focusing even on the home ownership. But again, you, both of you have said it's different, so I just must be out of touch.
I remember as well staying in Ireland during one of the earlier recessions when I was much younger and feeling like I must be thick and stupid because I was hearing the cream of the country was leaving. And clearly I was thick enough to stay at home and have a job at home. But that was a recession time. There have been other recessions since. I'm not going to say how long ago that was.
I'm not going to guess.
but the issue of the housing is real. And it is real in the cities as well, where people in not just Dublin, but the other cities as well, can buy a house. Some people are, I think, going because they can't get housing. Some people are going to places where they can build a stack of money. Others are saying, I can make a life elsewhere. But the housing, like if it was a question of housing, why can we not make a system? We have been talking about it now for so many years. Why can we not make a system where there's adequate housing in this country? There is adequate space. We would have to rethink things. We would have to build up rather than build out. We would have to have a more coherent planning system.
No, Nolene, can I say...
And if things were the case, yeah, then people would stay and they'd be delighted.
But Nolene, I know people, parents, grandparents living in 4 or 5-bedroom houses that want to get out of those houses and downsize. Yeah. They've offered them the council. There's no mechanism for them to be taken over.
Yeah.
We have an ageing population and we're not really planning for... You know, we're not planning for in 2 or 3 generations' time where someone finishes work and they've rented their whole life and they don't have the resources to rent. Where are they going to live?
Absolutely.
So, you know, if we can't start planning for what's happening or going to happen in 10, 20, 30, 40 years, then people get a wee bit nervous as to what we can do in the short term. But I have to take a break. It's going to be a 4-minute break because that clears the decks then for another topic with Leonard, Nolene and Jimmy. Stay where you are. In the last section of our Friday panel with Leonard Watson, owner of Watson's Menswear, Letterkenny and community campaigner, Nolene Blackwell, human rights lawyer, and Councillor Jimmy Kavanagh, Fine Gael councillor in the Letterkenny Milford Municipal District. And lots of you texting in. I'll get to those in the next hour. But very sadly, so far this year, there's been 61 deaths on our roads, 12 pedestrians, 25 drivers, 18 passengers, 4 motorcyclists and 2 pedal cyclists. So you can only imagine the devastation that has wreaked on families and communities right across the Republic of Ireland. 2024 so far continues a worrying trend for road fatalities in the Republic. Last year was the worst in nearly a decade, 188 lives lost. Taoiseach Simon Harris says that road safety will be a priority issue for him in his new role. 5 years ago, Ireland was being celebrated within the EU for road safety following a reduction in fatalities of over 40%. So what has changed and what can we do? Nolene Blackwell, what do you think?
Well, there was a interesting developments even yesterday. RTE Primetime devoted a whole programme to it yesterday evening. And Commissioner Drew Harris as well said every Garda on the beat now had to give half an hour of their shift to road traffic duties. So it does certainly look like we have the legislation. That's not the problem. We don't have the tech that's needed by the guards. But there is something around implementation where the issues that are being identified by everyone, by guard, by coroners, by families, are speed, drink and drugs. And speed, if we're not tackling speed, we're not tackling a lot of it. Oh yeah, and mobile phones is the other thing. So yesterday I nearly freaked out. I pressed the button for a pedestrian light, went and I saw a sort of a van speeding up to get through before the light turned red, so I stopped. But he was trying to speed up, get through the red light and text on his phone at the same time. So scary stuff. But it seems to me that there are things that, like, Yesterday evening, they mentioned as well, you know, those average camera speeds. I just think they're such a great idea that it's not that you're caught speeding at a particular point, but that if you get from point A to point B faster than something, you must have been speeding, then have a camera take that, then have you penalised as a result of it, possibly points at a certain stage along the way. It seems to me there are some tech solutions now. Okay, we're trying to put guards in the spot, but they can't be everywhere. But you could reduce speed very much. And implementation seems to be the problem with people disregarding drink driving, which I thought really was a no-no in our society now, but apparently not.
Jimmy, what do you think?
Yeah, Greg, I think I can go for a coffee because Nolan has said everything I was going to say. I think, you know, the big issues, as you said, are the drinking, the drugs, the speeding, the mobile phones, we're not wearing seatbelts. I think just maybe adding the state of our roads too in some places. The A5 springs to mind, and that we've been trying to fix for decades. And also, Greg, maybe just the amount of traffic that we have now, and, you know, what can we do to get cars off the road is something we should be thinking of, about as well. But, you know, that statistic there, there was 8,000 stopped last year for drinking drugs. Over 35% were over the limit. You know, that is absolutely frightening when you think that, you know, maybe every third car you're meeting is somebody stoned or somebody drunk. You know, if that's it's just frightening. I don't know, Greg, there's the end-to-end cameras that Nolan just mentioned, I think, is a great idea.
Well, you don't do over 80 in the port tunnel because you know for a fact you're going to get done. That's just the bottom line. You just simply don't, because you know that if you do, well, I mean, obviously you could do 90 and then 60 and do the average, right? But you simply don't. So you could do that coming out of, but there's so many turnoffs. Like, say, for instance, if you were to do that between, let's just say, for example, if you were to do that between Ballybuffet and Donegal Town, you know, there's lots of different alternative routes and people turning off and stuff. So you could still fly, if you were going to Harvey's Point, for example, you could still bomb it to the turnoff. Sorry to be so parochial, Nolan, but you could still bomb it to the turnoff at Harvey's Point because you know the next camera that's going to average your speed is a further, 5 kilometres up the road. I'm not trying to pick holes in it, but I think that's great in an M50 or an M1 or an N2. I think it gets slightly more complicated, doesn't it, when you use that for Donegal, for an example.
Just on that end-to-end one, Greg, you know, there's a statistic there that's saying that where it is applied, that there's a 98% compliance rate.
You know. No doubt about
that. So, you know, it obviously works, and I'll obviously take your point too. It's not possible everywhere, but, I mean, will people change routes just to get speeding? I don't know. I think it would just be a big help. But it is, you know, that figure you give, 188, I think, in 2023 and 155 in 2022. I mean, it's horrendous. It really is horrendous when you think the waste of life there, in most cases, young lives.
The messaging doesn't seem to change. It's the same thing. And I suppose, what else can you say? I don't know. The Road Safety Authority, I think they lack teeth. I think they could be doing an awful lot more. There seems to be some talk of reform now. I mean, obviously, there's an education angle to this, Leonard. Do you think the RSA needs to do more, just publishing figures and the same advice that they just seem to send out before a storm or before a bank holiday weekend? You know, there's no imagination here. We're in a TikTok, Snapchat era. You know, I'd like to see them try and get their messaging, you know, a bit more refined, snappy, change it around a little bit. That's education. That's one side of it. But also, we could be doing things, could we not, like education programs in transition year? You know, maybe students should do their theory test in transition year. Like, there's so many different things that we could be doing, and we're not doing them at all. And it's not one solution. There's many factors to it, many ways to approach it. But I just, you know, it sounds good that every guard will do half an hour road enforcement, a shift. And it sounds like you're doing something, but come on, seriously? Am I going to bump into one of those guards going over Loch Salt this evening? Of course I'm not.
Greg, do you know what? I was just, my main point, we do not have enough guards on the roads. You look at 10 years ago, you were meeting guard at checkpoints every so often. I remember chatting to a guard a couple of years ago, and they'd do a checkpoint in a certain part of the county, and they said within an hour they'd always catch somebody drink driving, and then they had to take them to Letterkenny or Mulford to process them, and he says that was them for the night. Like, You know, but what you said there, I heard a couple of young fellows on the radio on another station there yesterday. What you were on about, a programme, I know you kind of... I think there were transitioners where they were brought out by the, I think it was RSA and the fire brigade. They were shown cars from accidents. They were told what happened here. It was all around speed. Because the majority of deaths is between 17 and 24, young males. And they were brought out and they asked a couple of young fellows afterwards and every one of them admitted they were in a car that had been at excessive speed at some time in the year before. Like. Mm-hmm. Okay. So is it a thing that we have to start limiting engine sizes from 17 up to 21? You know, I heard you on about the limiters one morning, you know, were they a good idea? Mm-hmm.
Well, it's not a limiter, it's a monitor. So, you know, like you have access to the speed in the case of an emergency, but if you break a speed limit three times, it's 1, 2, 3, their insurance company, you lose your insurance, you're penalised. I wish we could tease it out more. Leonard Watson, owner of Watson Menswear, Letterkenny and Communities Campaigner, thank you so very much for your time. Have a wonderful weekend, Leonard. Thanks very much. Jimmy Kavanagh, really enjoyed having you on the show. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you, Greg. Thanks very much for having
great
me.
Great stuff. And Nolene, thank you so much for coming on. It's been great having your insights. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Greg.
Bye-bye. Pleasure. Take care. Have a lovely weekend. Bye-bye.
The same to you.
Okay, loads of you commenting. I'll get to those comments and so much more after we take a break for the news and obituary notices.